Sunday in the room.
The president is starving. Yeah.
That's a note to say. Hey, hey, how are you?
Hi.
You show up, and I'm thinking.
All right. Folks on the wall, please feel free to sit at the table if there's if there are seats. You don't have to be in exile. We're a collegiate body. Hey, Sue. All right, since it's 12:14 and I've pretty much taken roll, I think we're pretty safe to start. We just kind of want to get started as soon as possible so that we have time to get everything that is currently on the agenda, which I have now lost. Give me a second.
Technical difficulties is what we pay for, not start every meeting.
Okay, 12:15, we're calling this meeting to order so we can keep it moving. Are there currently any late additions to the agenda? So items that are not currently on the agenda that folks would like to have heard if we have time? Seeing none, we are moving on. Next is approval of the minutes. These will be the minutes from our last meeting on 11:15. Motions, amendments at this time.
Second.
There's been a motion to approve. It's been seconded. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, the minutes from 11:15 are approved. We are suspending committee reports in favor of business of the day, which is a lovely discussion with the two head honchos in the room. President Pollack and VP Mary Opperman. So I'm gonna turn it over to you all and you all do your thing. Folks, if you have questions that you'd like to ask, kind of get Pilar and Jeremy's attention so they, while the president is speaking, so we can get you on the list. Go for it.
Yes, and I'm actually not going to speak much. I knew that you had a very packed agenda. I saw you all just about a month and a half ago at the big event in where was that?
Clarman.
That's right. We were in Clarman. Clarman.
Right.
Overflow.
And so I thought I would just cede my time to any discussion you have, and then if it doesn't take our full time, then cede back time to you to because I know you did know you had a very packed agenda.
Well, just to kind of begin, did you want to, I know there were a few questions that were submitted to you that were not quite answered at the president's address. Were there any, did you have any follow-up to some of those? A lot of it, I think, revolved around, I mean, there were a lot of things. Oh, I see Mary's raising her hand, so I'll go ahead.
Yeah, those are still with me, and I apologize for that. We're just late getting those back. So Martha won't be able to answer those because I didn't
know about
they're,
them,
they're
sorry.
Still with me, so I'm
pulled up. I mean, I can give just one very quick update because I know people are waiting. We are finally just about ready to announce the presidential task force on diversity and climate. I had honestly hoped that could go much more quickly. I had initially thought we could get it stood up and it would have already been working for about 6 to 8 weeks, but there was so much concern about the process by which people were named to it that we eventually decided the most fair thing to do would be to turn the process over to the Scheinman Institute. They held a series of open forums. There were, I think, about 170, 180 people that showed up at them. There was then a process of self-nominations, and we are just about ready to announce that any day. We still are going to ask for the work to be done by the end of the spring semester. People will just have to work more quickly than they would have had we been able to do it more quickly.
Got it.
And again, I want to remind people, that's not the only thing we're doing. There's lots of other work going on at, you know, at the same time.
All right. Well, if there are no, if you don't have anything prepared, are there any general questions that folks have from the room, from the floor?
Hi, I'm Christy Mahoney with Human Ecology.
Hi.
I was struck during your address by the comments on encouragement to be risk-taking.
Uh-huh.
And we've had some conversations within my work group about it. Given the 15 years I've been here at Cornell, the culture here is not something that I would call risky, innovative. And so I'm curious for you to offer, how do you see us moving the culture?
Yeah, so I think that's actually a great question. And I agree, I've been struck to some extent by a less willingness to take risks at all levels than I might like to see, than I might think is healthy for a big organization like ours in the 21st century. I think what I can do at my level is mostly make use of the bully pulpit, is mostly make the case as often as I can that the world is changing quickly, and that if we are too cautious, if we look inward too much, we're not going to be able to adapt enough. I say that when I go to the academic leadership meetings with the deans. I say it when I come to the various assemblies, and I hope that people then take that back and come up with ideas about how to allow more risk to be taken. I think for anyone in here who's a supervisor, the first thing you can do is go back and reward some risk taking, and not have people feel that if they fail at something. I mean, you have to make risks sensibly, right? If you're running our power plants, don't have the power plants fall on the coldest day of the year or something. But, encourage people to take smart, sensible risks and don't penalize them when they fail, and model that behavior yourself. I think we have to do that throughout our academic programs and throughout our support and operational programs.
So can I piggyback? So what would you say for the staff that are not supervisors that want to take risks? But the supervisors are not the risk takers. And how do we go about approaching them and say, okay,
Yeah, I think Mary wants to.
Yeah,
that's really, really important. I get mm-hmm. where you're coming from with that question.
Yeah, so we've been talking a bit about this in the staff survey groups that have been meeting, and also with some small ad hoc groups that I've been meeting with, because I do think that this is a critical issue for us with current employees and also with future employees. And part of what we need to do is we need to get people to speak up when their good ideas are getting clogged in the organization, and that we have to create some safety for people to call those issues out. And so we're trying to create pathways where people who have good ideas and want to push forward are not being able to get those ideas beyond a supervisor who maybe has perceived their role to be to stop things. In other words, the job feels like a position of no. And so we're trying to have those conversations. One of the things that we are working really hard on is supervisory and leadership training programs that are clear about the expectations of leaders. What are we rewarding in supervisory jobs and leadership jobs? And then how are we going to assess whether what we value is what's being rewarded?
And one of the things that Mary may kill me because I haven't even talked with her about this at all yet, but I'm a big believer in carrots as much as sticks. And one of the things we might talk about are some small reward programs. They don't have to be big rewards. I'm not talking big money, but something that indicates that from the very top, we support risk taking, and maybe I haven't thought through the details yet. Does this go to a group of people? Does it go to an individual? I think if you're going to have this kind of a system, you have to reward it for taking the risk, not just for the outcome. So sometimes we even have to reward people who took risks, but they didn't work, as long as you learn something from it, right? You have to take that next step and learn. So I will take as an action item to talk with Mary about something like this.
So we took our first, because we didn't talk about it, but we think similarly in this area. We have one thing that we've already done, which is added a new innovation and award. So you all have until December 8th to put people up for the innovation and award, which is about risk, even if it failed, right? So you can nominate your peers for that. The other is the SPOT award program that we hope we'll have in place soon, which is to reward people with small awards for things that they tried in their workplaces. So we're hoping to start both of those very, very soon.
And one thing that I think would be useful is when people apply for those awards, I mean, maybe not this time around, but either you say, I tried this and it works, or I tried it and it didn't work and here's what I learned. Because I really do believe that a lot of times that's the most important thing, is what do you learn, because that's what will help you the next time. So as long as people have an opportunity to report that.
Epic
failure. Well, we don't want epic failures. I don't want the power plant going out on the coldest day of the year.
Christine, you had another question?
No.
Oh, Lark, did you?
No, she's good. She got an answer, I guess.
Oh, gotcha.
Chris.
So I'm just curious, in your role as president, have you seen areas where you feel like you might be able to take a risk?
Well, I'll tell you one area we're trying to there are a couple of areas I'll tell you too. One is, I think the entire Cornell Tech enterprise was a big risk. And as we continue to push forward with that and continue to push forward more broadly in New York, we're taking a big risk there. But I think it's a risk that is incredibly important to the future of this university. The other area where I'm working with the provost to try and do some risky things is in teaching innovations, in the new Center for Teaching Innovation, which was created before I got here, pulling together the old CTE and the educational technology folks from within IT. We were asking faculty, try new things in your teaching and gather. I'm trying to push towards something that I call evidence-based learning. Gather evidence about what works and doesn't work. The Arts College is already doing this with their active learning initiative, and they have remarkable results. You look at their introductory biology classes, and they have this wonderful, it's just beautiful data where they show the grade distribution before they did this of majority students and minority students. And really what I think we want to be looking at is students who come from well-resourced high schools and less well-resourced high schools. But for the first approximation, they looked at majority and minority students, and there was a grade gap. And after they put in this new teaching approach in these introductory biology classes, the grade gap is completely gone. Other experiments will fail, but we'll learn from that. And that's another area where I'm really trying to push risk-taking and innovation, and then learning from risks that don't work.
Thank you.
Sure.
I'd like to follow up on that personally. So good lead into my actual question, but thinking of the things that you just mentioned, so particularly Cornell is such a large organization with a very large workforce, and we want to encourage risk-taking behavior. But Cornell's launched quite a few large initiatives over the last few years, including the tech campus. Engaged Cornell is a good example, and it's very difficult for at least Ithaca-based employees, remote employees, and so forth, and to even see themselves or their role or their function in any of those initiatives. I think Engage Cornell took a while, but they actually launched a very small kind of grant. Out of all the grants, they had a very small grant that staff could take advantage of if they had a particular idea. So when we think about how do employees get involved in the mission of the institution, that's kind of what we mean. There are so many other opportunities for all other groups to be involved, but you know, we have to have very different types of discussions. So that being said, at the last board of, well, not the last board, but the spring Board of Trustees meeting, I gave a overview of kind of the changing workforce, blase, blase, and we talked about three proposals that kind of came from this assembly that were getting an additional employee elected trustee and then getting a board committee focused on personnel. At a large organization like this that does not have a board committee focused on personnel, it's strange. And had the request from Bob Harrison to actually send that as a resolution from the assembly. And so since that has been sent, we haven't really heard much back. Has there been any follow-up on that?
Yeah, and I have to apologize for that. Mary and I were talking about that just yesterday, and we fully own this. That it fell through the cracks, and we do apologize. It came in August, I was pretty new, and it literally just fell through the cracks. We have a board meeting coming up next week. We're going to discuss it with them. I do want to say one thing, though. I mean, I've been involved in other universities, and I don't know how this is going to go, so I'm not responding to the resolution. But the idea that it's strange not to have a committee on staff at the board level, I've actually not seen that in other places. That doesn't mean it's a bad idea, but I don't think it's obvious that would be everywhere. I just want to correct that impression. But in any case, we do apologize. Mary brought this to me yesterday, and she was like, I forgot. It's like, I forgot, and our bad. We will address it and get back to you probably right after the beginning of the year if we meet with them next week. Thank you.
Other questions in the room? I have to say something because I can't actually see all of you like that.
No, there are no more. And you know, we did have a pretty, I think we met, I met with the, at the start of the year with a lot of staff and also at that bigger. So I think we've had a lot of interaction. So if they're not questions, I don't want to force questions. I will happily cede my time. I want to make one plea. This is probably out of school, but I want to make one plea, and that is for the United Way. So in my view, even if you give $3 or a dollar, in my view, it sends a real signal to our community when our campus, I used to say this in Michigan too, when our campus, which is such a big employer in this region, contributes to an organization that largely helps the local community. You can specify any organization that you want it to go to. You don't have to give a lot. The university as a whole is trying to raise, help me, Joel, $750,000. We're about 2/3 of the way there. That's great. I'm actually more concerned about numbers of participants than dollars, but I would encourage you, you know, in this season of giving, it's pretty easy. You log in, and if you're willing to give even just a few dollars, it does tell our broader community, many of whom are people are really struggling, that we, the university, all of us care. So that's my plea. And then the other thing is I just want to wish you all, I hope you all had good Thanksgivings, and I want to wish you all a really happy holiday season. I hope you all get a nice break in that week when no one is around. So thank you.
Before you go, question, sorry about that.
Yeah.
One more.
That's okay. I almost snuck out, you listening.
I can't let you off that easy. So at the last university assembly meeting when you came, there was a discussion of two topics. One was the consensual relations policy that I know Charlie has asked to try to fill that task or that committee. And then there was also the discussion of free speech. And I didn't say it at that meeting since I was a little tardy, but I did want to kind of have a brief discussion on kind of the free speech issue, particularly as it pertains to employees, because that perspective seems to have been lost in each of those discussions around what it means to, you know, if we talk about academic freedom and people being able to express their ideas, particularly within the relative safety of the classroom, but that's not necessarily the same in the workplace. And you compound that with the discussion of risk taking. And so it's kind of like, we don't exactly know what our boundaries are. So I don't know if you had any initial thoughts on that as that goes, or how that's going to play out in these discussions.
Yeah, Ulysses, you raise a good point. It is true. As an employee, it is, first of all, I mean, we're a private employer. We're not the government. So free speech is different. But it's also true that as employees, we don't have the same, the expectation is not the same in terms of our speech and as employees as it is for, say, students. So I think you're raising an important point. What is speech and what is our right to free speech and freedom of expression in the workplace, not when you assemble for other things, but in the workplace, because we do have expectations for what we do in the workplace, how we treat one another, how we treat our students, our alumni, and each other. And so it is different in the performance of our jobs.
And it's important to note that that is also true of faculty. This is not a place, so the academic freedom does not allow faculty to say anything at all. And in fact, the university has academic freedom rights as well. So if a faculty member in a astronomy course wanted to teach astrology, we would be within our rights as a university to say, no, you can't do that. You don't have a free speech right to teach whatever you want. Every time we review a faculty member for promotion or tenure, we're looking at the content of their speech. So this is, you asked, it's a very tricky question. All these questions around free speech are very tricky. But I think what I want to just echo is Mary's point that one's rights as an employee are a little bit different from one's rights as a citizen of the United States.
Right. Jeremy, you had a question?
Yeah, and it's on that, and to build upon what we're just talking about and add a layer of complexity, was a conversation, Mary, you and I had, which was around that risk-taking idea, where we're talking about how to change culture here. And one of the ways we do that is reducing the fear of having those conversations.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where I'm trying to find out where that line is too, is how do we change a culture if we're afraid to have a conversation.
Yes. No, that's right. But I'm not sure that that's a free speech issue.
Right.
That's a culture issue, right? That's an issue of doing the kinds of things. I'm sorry, I didn't get your name, but Babatunde was hinting at, that is, of rewarding certain kinds of behavior, of encouraging certain kinds of behavior. I don't think that's as much of a free speech issue as the kinds of things we talk about when we say, when we invite a speaker to campus, no matter how controversial they are, we allow them to speak. I think it's just a slightly different sort of conversation.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, what I'm hearing around the issues of risk and reward is I hear from staff who have ideas that they want to advance, new ways of doing things, or old ways of doing things that they think could be dropped, and or oversight that they think is unnecessary, and they can't advance those.
Yeah.
That, to me, that is very different from the kinds of things that that I get, where someone says, I really felt as though what someone said to me, and then I get it repeated, made it very hard for me to come back to that workplace. That's very different. That is not advancing an innovative idea. That is trampling on somebody's ability to come in and feel that they can work free of fear. And so those are not overlapping circles.
By the way, this is going to shift from speech for just a minute, but I do want to again amplify something Mary said that's really important. When we're thinking of risk-taking and innovation on this campus, I think it is just as important that we think about whether the processes we have in place now are all necessary as it is to think about new processes. I think there's a lot of things that we do here because we've always done them that way, and we should be stepping back and thinking, do we really need that heavy a process? That's an aside, but I think that's an important
thing. But it really is very critical about trust and the ability to say, if my colleague over there did it, I trust that's good. Yeah. I probably don't need to look at that. My time would be really well spent doing this other thing that I'm really interested in learning instead. And I'd like to be able to do that. And I could add value doing that.
In fact, when I first started supervising other people, when I first, as a faculty member, you're always supervising students, but that's a very different kind of relationship. Here was the hardest thing for me. The hardest thing for me to learn was how to let someone who reported to me do what they were doing the way they wanted to do it, which might be very different from the way I would do it, and know that sometimes it would actually be better. Sometimes it'd be worse, but that was okay. That was how they were going to grow. But still know, at a certain point I was responsible. So if they were going to smash headlong into a wall, there was a moment at which I had to step in. But finding myself willing to say, you know what, it's okay. Might not be perfect, might be better. And trusting myself enough to know when I would jump in when they were about to step up. That's really hard. And so again, I think for any of you who are supervisors, learning that is important. I think we need to do that in our training. And then for those of you who aren't supervisors, when you're given that freedom, take it really seriously. Take your responsibility seriously. Step up. Explain what you're doing. And if you think you're about to might be going into a wall, but you're not sure, go and talk to your supervisor and tell them, I want to try, not every single time, but I want to try this. It's really way out there. It might fail terribly. What do you think? And see how it goes. And then they'll trust you the other times when you're not about, you're not about to go into the wall to take those. I don't know. I'm just babbling. I apologize.
So Ulysses, I don't know if it isn't like there's a hard answer to the issue of free speech is for an employee. I think it's a conversation that we have, but I think you're right to raise it, because in the employment setting, it is a different thing. And while we are a university, we are employees at the university, and that is our primary role here. So you're right to raise it, because that's our primary role here.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think after the for example, after the first staff forum we did on Black Lives Matter, Blue Lives Matter, All Lives Matter, I think everybody was very happy that we had the conversation because people were able to speak about whatever their perspective was. People are I think what we forget oftentimes is that the political views of the employees seem to differ quite a bit from the students. And so, you know, regardless of what I believe, I don't want anybody to feel like they aren't able to take part in that discourse, but they walk that thin line of, well, when does taking part in discourse or expressing a contrary opinion create a hostile work environment for somebody else? And I think that part is what's been left out of a lot of the conversations, that free speech that we've been having. And I don't think it's on purpose. I just think because of the people who are in the room, it just automatically kind of gravitates towards the students and faculty. So we're just kind of sitting in the corner saying, wait a minute. But I appreciate the answer. And Pilar, you had one final thought before we...
So speaking, and obviously we're focusing on staff and employees, and sometimes that's difficult with students being a strong focus in faculty. How would just the regular employee be possibly affected or worked with the campus code, for example?
Well, the campus code is one of those places where I really think as a campus, we need to be looking carefully at it. It's been here a long time. It's had a lot of stuff aggregated into it. I know that the UA is looking at it. I found it surprising when I came here that we have one code for students and faculty and staff. Often the student code is broken out, but that's what it is at Cornell. So I think we have to, I don't have a simple answer. We need to take a look at it and see what makes sense.
Because even maybe, you know, the difference between our very dictated and closed, let's say work areas, mm-hmm. to then our behavior participation in relationships within the wider campus community as well.
Right, you're raising a huge point because the code is for actions other than in your employment. So think about that.
Right.
When are you acting other than in your
and
employment?
And that's part of why it's really odd that it's one code. Yeah, no, I agree and that's really, so I just one last thing, since Ulysses mentioned it, I do want to let this group know what I have told other groups about the consensual relations policy, which is we don't have one here. We don't have an official policy. It's not in the policy deck. It's not in the code. We have an informal thing that was written back in the 90s. We have to have such a policy. We need it to protect our faculty and staff. We need it to protect our students. We need it to protect the reputation of the university. I know there have been a couple of years of attempts to put something together. I have asked Charlie Van Loon as dean of the faculty, and he's appointed Anna's last name, Waymack. Anna Waymack, to work with him. And I've told them, I don't actually think it should be that hard, because just about every other university in the country has such a code, and it works for them, and they're all pretty similar. I have told them, I don't mean to be a hard whatever about this, but I've told them they have till the end of the year to get something together. And much as I respect, and I completely respect shared governance, this is a risk for the university, and if they can't get something together by the end of the year, then I'm going to have to go to the Board of Trustees with one that I've pulled from somewhere else and say, Board of Trustees, you adopt that. We simply cannot, in 2017, not have such a code.
So with that being Charlie Van Loon and then Martha, who's a graduate student,
Anna,
is there...
There's a committee that
staff?
Employees? The committee is very broad. Yeah, okay. Includes lots of... everybody in the... But I just couldn't have too many co-chairs.
Yep.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Take care. All right. Well, let's move right back into business of the agenda, our main agenda with our committee reports. First up is going to committee reports to less than 3 minutes. We actually have a lot to do today. First is Communications Committee. Carrie.
Okay. You said less than a minute. All right, well, our 2 minutes. Okay, our mailing went out last week to all staff. We had 1,900 people open it, which is a 22% open rate, which is pretty respectable, but something we can build on. We did not meet last week due to the holiday, so our next meeting is December 6th, which is next Wednesday. We have a new member, Adam Howell, who is one of our newly elected representatives. See what else. Chris and I met with Sarah Berlinski about a sort of sustainability recognition program that we're thinking of taking on. And that should, you should be seeing that sometime in December. That'll probably be in our December mailing. And we are targeting the week before holiday break for our next mailing. I think that is, I met with the Transportation Task Force yesterday regarding the follow-up poll on transportation and parking. So that's all in the works.
Perfect. Questions for Carrie? Nope. Great. FYI, folks, the audio in the room is really good today, so I can hear all your side conversations. If you can take it down while everybody else is talking, that would be great. Next is Employee Education and Development Committee, Marjorie.
We did not meet last week because of the holidays.
How dare you?
So, I know. Yeah. So, but no report, I guess. Then. But our next meeting is next week, and we are in. What is the room that's in 626? It's in 626.
Thurston.
Thurston. Yes, Thurston. So next week, same time.
Gotcha. Employee Welfare Committee, Laura.
Our next meeting is December 14th, next Thursday, noon to 1 p.m., Savage 232. And there are two resolutions on the floor. I hope we can really have some good discussion about R7 and R8, which are on today's agenda under business of the day. I'm not going to say any more so that we can get to talking about those.
Fantastic. Elections, Pilar.
Gina and I are meeting on Thursday, Friday. One of those to go through for elections in the spring.
Someday. Not great.
This week.
Personnel policy, Sue.
Hi, how are you doing again? Hey. Ulysses and I have been talking. Well, I'll have two, if they're not resolutions, they're just, how would you say that, Ulysses?
Recommendations.
Recommendations for the two policy changes through HR, but I'll have those to the board, to our group, in the next meeting. Because the policies are getting finalized by HR with Alan Bishop right now.
Fantastic. And this is just so you know, it's leave accrual or wait, does that, I get that wrong?
Yes, it's the leave accrual, and it's also the New York,
the family blah, 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 blah.
The family that starts the first of the year.
Gotcha. All right, so we'll be looking for those. Staff recognition awards and events, Tanya.
We have award recipients and waiting on Marilyn to give me some dates that are available for Mary so that we can coordinate with the nominators.
Perfect. And which awards are these? These are
Opperman Award and the George Peter Award. So we have one Opperman Award recipient, two George Peter Award recipients.
Fantastic. Looking forward to it. Transportation Task Force, Christine.
Hello. Other than the resolution to discuss today, parking optimization study is working through contracts, and transportation expects the consultant to be on board in January, engaging with the communities in the spring term.
Ooh, always on point. I love it. Is Chad in the room?
No.
Nope. Moving on. Peggy and or Herf? Tyree says he.
Herf is in contact with a woman in transportation, Bridget.
Good, to
see what arrangements can be made for retirees.
Fantastic. And Peggy, are you all connecting with, I can't remember, Marjorie, was it your committee who was working on, wasn't there something about additional educational benefits for retirees, or did I make that up?
Herf and I are both interested in transportation committee.
So I don't know if we were really talking about it. I don't remember.
Okay. I'll look through my notes. I feel like there was something, but and it involved your committee, but I probably forgot to actually spend
it. Yeah, it might have been in passing. I don't know.
That might be my bad. Probably my bad. It's likely my bad. So, executive committee, Jeremy.
So we worked through some operations and logistics this afternoon. We will actually be hearing from Charlie Van Loan next meeting about the consensual relationships, and stay tuned for that.
Fantastic. And you know, just so everybody is clear, if you are not currently staffed on one, or at least one EA committee or UA committee, or if you're just interested in a UA committee because we still need to fill some seats, please let Kevin know as soon as possible so we can make sure all lists are updated and everybody's able to meet, so and also so the other assemblies won't bug us. There we go. All right.
Can I say something then?
Raise your hand, Kevin.
Please, go for it.
So what we're looking for is for one employee assembly member to sit on the CIC.
Campus Infrastructure Committee. Campus Infrastructure Committee deals with transportation, information technology.
I can read it to you.
And then please mention the time they meet as well.
No. We will not.
Commit first.
So what the committee's description is to review and approve proposed motions related to environmental impact and sustainability, information technologies, transportation, commuter policies, and then any other topics relevant for campus infrastructure. And this is by the University Assembly Executive Board, but we have to have members to sit on it.
When do they meet?
Did we, oh, 5:30.
Yeah.
When
did
you win? In the morning?
No.
5:30 is every week they're doing? Is it the CIC
yeah.
or the CJC that's
meeting
every week?
No, CJC is there.
Okay.
Yeah, every
2 weeks.
I don't even think
this is 5:30.
Folks, we can sort out schedules another time. We just need to,
right.
If you're interested in the committee, talk to Kevin. Pam, you had a thought?
Just a quick one. There is a newly formed ad hoc committee that's a branch off from the Codes and Judicials Committee. That
already populated. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go ahead,
move
on.
Look at that, we're all, all right.
Thank you, Kevin.
All right. All right, let's move.
Christine still had a question.
I have a question.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Can you give us an update on the last year, the University Assembly Welfare Committee was advancing work around a smoke-free environment. Can you give us an update on where that rests?
To my understanding, since I no longer chair or sit on that committee, the new chair, actually that committee, when they met last a couple of weeks ago, they presented their timetable for the referendum. So I don't, Jeremy, I don't know if you were at the meeting, so I don't know exactly what that timetable was, but I know they solidified their timetable and they're probably working with I'm assuming they're working with the Office of the Assemblies because they have the office has the tool.
No, I would reach out to the chair to see what the current status is, but it is in process.
Do you know who the chair is?
It's on the Assembly's website, and I don't have his net ID. But
it's Joe Anderson.
There we go, Gina.
It's Joe Anderson, and to my knowledge, they have tabled that until the spring. There were just too many other community-wide issues that were being contended to this semester that they felt that they didn't want to conflate things. So they're waiting until the spring.
Gotcha. But they didn't drop it. That's because it was on their agenda. So that's how I know they didn't drop it.
It was on the agenda, and they did comply with the request to have a response and a timetable, I think, by the end of this semester. So if that's not yet been made public, it will be soon.
Got it. Perfect. Thank you. Okay, let's move back into business of the day, as Laura said, so we can make sure we get to these resolutions that are on the docket. First up is EA Resolution 7, Advancing a Comprehensive Transportation Study. I'm going to turn it over to Christine and Laura to introduce it.
You all should have had a chance to look this over. I did email it as an attachment that's also been in box.
The Transportation Task Force got started last spring under the direction of Kevin Fitch, and Christy Mahoney took it over this summer. We've been meeting very regularly and wholeheartedly support the idea that this campus desperately needs a holistic parking and transportation study that includes commuting and parking issues on campus and transportation services under the direction of Bridget Brady is planning such a thing. And as Christy said earlier, there are plans to have a consultant on board by the beginning of the year. So Bridget Brady has asked us to consider passing an endorsement of this to reinforce the need and the fact that the employees feel very strongly that, you know, transportation and parking are huge issues. That came out of the survey that Carrie did a month or so ago. And, you know, we're asking for discussion if people, you know, have issues with any of the specific clauses in this, but I think it's really important for us to pass something saying that we as a body representing all of the employees here on campus feel that this needs to be examined, you know, on a campus-wide level.
So I just have, I guess, a question or a clarification. What the difference between the parking optimization study that's supposed to be completed next fall and what we plan to do with the transportation
question. So I believe in a typical comprehensive transportation planning study, you would include a parking optimization element.
Okay.
I think breaking it out as an independent study isn't unusual, but it it could go either way and is, I believe, in response to the pressures that we've been giving in terms of moving these issues forward. They knew it would take longer to get a larger study, so they had money in hand and could advance a smaller study first.
So the first one, so the parking one, just is basically focusing on just parking,
right?
I mean, which is what it basically is.
And then we'll hand that information and a new system to the university, and then the university will hand that information over to the consultant hired for the comprehensive transportation.
That will involve outside of the community and
the whole system.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jeremy?
I really, I just wanted to say this looks great. I really
actually have an amendment
really
that I'd like to. Can I do that?
Sure.
Okay, so I propose an amendment after line 11, which reads, whereas the last known intra-intercampus travel survey was conducted in 2005. And after after 16, whereas in September 2017, after 16, maybe if I could read. No, it's not there. Okay, after zones. All right, so after 20, whereas during the November 17th meeting of the Campus Planning Committee restated their vision for and support of integrated transportation planning for the campus. And then as a final resolve clause, and this is going to be off the cuff, that we request that a moratorium on be placed on the removal of existing parking until the study is done and a campus circulator is in place.
Okay, so the first first couple ones I definitely missed because I don't see them actually in the version that's in the meeting packet.
There was another one. That's why I'm doing it now. There's another version that didn't get somewhere up. That's why I just read them.
That's not the one that's in box or the one that was printed.
We print from box.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So
I don't know.
It's not what's in box.
We communicate, right. That's what I'm saying. We had communicated some that revision that I sent yesterday somehow, and I don't know. So there are three amendments to it.
Is there any way we could project it?
Well, this resolution is not being voted on today. Correct?
Yeah, so
Yes. This resolution is listed as business of the day, which makes it eligible for amendments and votes.
Okay.
There's a motion to amend a few things. And so the first is on line 11, right? But after line 11.
Can I forward you something?
Yeah. Maybe forward it to Pam, because that way Pam can.
I can put it on the.
Yeah, put it on the screen.
What's your PH 55? The only thing is the last one was just discussed this morning, and it's not in this version.
That at least will get us on the same page, so we all see something.
So while that's being projected, your off the cuff language for your final resolve clause is resolve that the EA requests a moratorium on the removal of any existing parking.
Yes. Until the study is completed and a campus circulator is in place.
Parking.
That's what you call risky.
No. So the study is completed and a campus circulator is in place.
It should probably be in operation.
Okay. Okay, so while the other part is getting put up on the screen, let's focus on this amendment. So this would be an amendment to the resolution to put in a final resolve clause that reads, the EA requests a moratorium on the removal of any existing parking until the study is completed and a campus circulator is in operation. Is there any second to that amendment being put on the floor for discussion?
I second.
It's been seconded. Seeing as how it's been seconded, we are moving into discussion on the amendment only. So, opening up the speaker list for the amendment. Did you want to just start with a why you kind of put this in?
I have a question, sorry.
Go ahead.
Just for clarification, the campus circulator, what does that mean?
It's a campus dedicated transit.
Okay, so would that be understood, or should we maybe be a little bit more specific?
It's the language transportation uses. Okay. I think we could clarify.
On that note, I have heard from a couple of people that they were confused by that term as well. I think shuttle would be pretty clear, but that's just a suggestion.
Would you rather change it to shuttle? Christy?
Maybe add the word circulator shuttle.
That would
probably be a little bit more clear for people, yeah.
Okay, so it's campus circulator shuttle.
Pays for that?
Okay.
Who pays for it? All the money the college is paying facility services.
Pam, could you scroll back up and pass the amendment? She has them in red. There we go. Oh, too far. Go down just a little bit more, please.
Where
are you? She has them. I think they're in red.
The number two, yeah, the yes. Amendments. So 12, we need to.
Scroll down a little. There we go. So both of those. So we can see both of those. That's perfect. Okay. So we're still talking about the resolve clause. Any further discussion on the resolve, on the final resolve clause that we've now changed to having circulator shuttle is in operation?
Yes.
I
don't have the exact wording for it. I'm thinking that it might be better in that resolve clause to say not removing a total number of spaces. So if they were to remove spaces someplace, remove them from one place and add them someplace else, that wouldn't be an issue. We don't want to reduce the total number. And it allows just a little more flexibility. And a little more likelihood that it would be accepted.
That's the intention.
So I'm just trying to think of how to word that idea in the resolved clause, which is we don't want to reduce the total number of available spaces until the completion of this.
So not being location, right? So not locking us into
not specific spaces because we don't care. What we care about is total number of available spaces.
Does that work for everyone? So, yes.
We don't. That's not final language. I mean, we need language.
Right.
Yeah. Can I? Oh, I will. Sorry. Yeah. Scroll down.
You're suggesting the EA requests a moratorium on the reduction of parking spaces?
Yes. No, a moratorium on reducing, yeah, reduction of available parking spaces. Total number of available parking spaces.
Do you want me to just type this in here?
Yes, I mean, yeah. Sure.
So
we're working on it.
Reduction of, so I have the EA resolved that the EA requests a moratorium on the reduction of the total number of parking spaces until the study is completed and a campus circulator shuttle is in operation. That's the amendment to the amendment. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right, so there has been an amendment to the amendment, FYI. So is that seconded?
Second.
Is there a move to adopt the amendment to the amendment by unanimous consent?
Yes.
Is there any dissent to doing that? Seeing none, that the amendment that we're going to be discussing now is as I just said, is be it finally resolved that the EA, or be it finally resolved, the EA requests a moratorium on the reduction of the total number of parking spaces until the study is completed. You type so fast? And a campus circulator shuttle is in operation. All right, that's the amendment on the floor. So we're in discussion on that amendment. Any other comments on that amendment? Comments, motions, other amendments to that amendment?
I see one.
I'm just curious what the difference is between a campus shuttle / circulator and the current TCAT system that we have in place at CU Lift.
Frequency of schedule and route.
Okay.
So it would be fixed route, that it would be a campus dedicated loop that would run more frequently than the 80, whatever.
82, 81.
Yeah.
81, 82.
You know, about 10 years ago, they had a shuttle like that.
Yep.
East Hill shuttle. Well, the East Hill shuttle, but there was one that made a loop right on campus.
Yep.
And they said at the time when they did away with it that it was too expensive. The number of people who used it. It's 150,000 a year.
Is it really?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I also don't think that this language precludes TCAT itself or the university work, precludes the university from working with TCAT to get a more frequent campus circulator schedule put in place. It doesn't say who's going to run it, it just says it needs to be in place.
That's right.
It's an umbrella.
So they could very well do something. They could expand service of the 81 or the 82. They might bring back, they might bring back the separation like they had it before when I was an undergrad. They might do something like they do with the 10 that's much more frequent and is a shuttle from downtown back up here, or back up here, back up there. I'm not there.
Shuttle to California. Let's do it.
Woo! Shuttle to California.
No. So any further discussions, comments on this?
I guess one comment I have is with this amendment, I feel differently about who should be submitting it. Oh, I see how we broke it out. Okay. Because Bridget doesn't have anything to do with this final result.
No. It's only the assembly members are sponsoring it. You all listed the transportation task force members, so they're just listed so people know who's on the task force.
Okay.
They're not listed anywhere else. So it's you all are sponsoring. Your names are the ones that actually go on the website.
Making friends all over the place.
I really appreciate the moratorium, but is this enough to protect the most vulnerable employees who park at the free lots? Do we want to say something? If this is just going to reduce moratorium on the number of spots, but not charging for
But I can tell you that the reason those spots are there isn't going away. Those spots are, we have negotiated ourselves into a place where we have to provide those spots as a university.
So even if this moratorium means it will not affect the number of free spots.
That doesn't imply that, but this issue is this contract issue that we have in place protects those spots.
Okay. And I want to say that this probably would even look at MT. I think it's all spots. So they can't reduce MT parking. They can't, you know.
So like a freeze on the different tiers.
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
I don't want to freeze the tiers because once parking optimization goes into effect, they're supposed to eliminate a lot of tiers.
Right, but what we're saying is until the study is done.
Yeah.
The comprehensive transportation plan.
Right.
Right.
But once it's done, then this resolution is nothing.
Right. I guess what I'm suggesting is in fall of 18, when the parking optimization study is completed, it is highly likely that we'll go from 27 parking tiers to many, many less, and they would reduce. They won't reduce, if we tell them they can't, they won't reduce the total number, but they would reduce labels.
I think that what Tammy's main point is, whether they stop calling it MT or they're, you know, the B or whatever, is the fact that individuals that have been paying nothing to paying low numbers wouldn't suddenly be saying, oh, you are going to be shifted to, you know, the C, and there's a cost associated with those changes.
That would be a different, we would have to add that.
Right, and that's my concern. Yeah. That wouldn't be covered in the, is there a, I mean, would we want to actually protect the lowest wage employees who,
right.
who work, park on for free, and
my,
try to protect them from then being charged?
So the union contract negotiations has free parking embedded in it, and has for many, many years, and there's a certain amount of parking that's obligated to the contract, so we can certainly add it in, but it's protected by the union negotiations.
So that's the A lot we're talking
A,
about,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Not the lower next B or whatnot.
Okay.
Does that include temporary staff? Since they're not union?
Free parking for temporary staff. I don't know, the free parking on campus is only here because of the union contract negotiations. If not that commitment, it wouldn't be here.
Okay.
So is there proposed language that we need to insert, or I can only entertain amendments that are so it's like.
I think that might require a bit more discussion, and maybe a separate resolution is the right place for protecting free parking spaces. Because I think that's actually a larger conversation that we don't need to protect the ones we have. We need to have more of them. And I would argue that we need to work on instead a resolution on expanding the number of parking spaces that we have, not worrying about in this resolution trying to protect a certain number.
At this time, we're just at the freeze. We just want to make sure nothing changes. Yeah.
Well, what is?
We want to make sure they can't take any away right now.
Right.
Right. The big concern is the housing project is going to wipe out.
Yeah,
of lot, and if there's not some commitment to freeze the number of spaces at this level, they won't rebuild it. And we'll be in a place again where all that parking is gone,
right.
and there's no circulator to support staff. That
so,
and that's going to happen in a few months.
But I don't know that this addresses the concern that they could reduce the free parking that people rely on and shift it to spaces that cost money. Isn't that Peggy's concern?
Tammy. That was my concern, yeah.
Oh, sorry. Sorry.
There's only so many free spots, and keeping the same number of spots doesn't mean they can't start charging for those spots.
Right.
And the people at the A lot are some of the lower level employees.
But I think we have to, going back to the fact that that could be a fantastic thing to follow up and to keep an eye on. But for this specific, just it's the comprehensive transportation plan we want to focus on and tying them to that for us.
Pam, are you doing the laptop, the computer? I can't tell.
Yes.
Can you throw back down to the amendment and just kind of leave it there? Because I keep trying to write language and then I lose it. So just the resolve clause, because that's what we're focusing on. All right, great. So if we could just kind of leave it there until otherwise I keep losing the language. So would it make sense for us to insert, let's say, request a moratorium on the reduction of the total number of parking spaces and the removal of free spaces until the study is completed? Would that address the concern, Tammy?
Yes, that would, if people want it.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a simple way to put it there.
Yeah.
That's even riskier,
so let's go for it.
That's right.
So on behalf of, I'm gonna pretend Tammy's making the amendment.
Tammy.
The amendment to the amendment, to say after number of parking spaces and the number of free spaces.
Yeah. Here?
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you.
Until the study is completed and the campus circulator shuttle is in place. There we go. We should probably say A campus circulator shuttle is in operation.
Yes, A.
Yeah.
You don't know what B is in.
Replace B with A in front of campus circulator.
Where are we?
Right at the end.
Right before campus circulator.
39.
Last word.
Yeah, 39. Yeah, just take A.
What did you say, Danielle? I'm sorry. Oh, instead of and, if it's including, because I think the
including the number. Okay. Yep. So parking spaces, including the number of free spaces.
That makes much more sense. Yeah. Okay. So, is there
can
any
we just throw in a couple commas there?
After spaces and spaces.
We'll edit this later.
Yeah. Yes. Vote. The grammar can be correct.
Punctuation doesn't need a vote.
Yeah. No,
okay.
Carrie's gonna take a red pen before it's sent.
Yeah.
Great. All right. Is there any dissent to adopting the amendment to the amendment by you know what I mean?
Yes.
By unanimous consent. All right. Since there's no dissent to that, the amendment to the amendment is adopted. We're back into discussion on the amendment as proposed. Are there any further discussions on this amendment? Votes, motions.
Call a question.
There's been a call to question on the amendment. Is there a second?
Second.
I second.
Seconded. Any dissent to voting?
None.
Seeing none, we're going to vote on the amendment. All those in favor of the of inserting the amendment into the resolution, please raise your placard. Jeremy, I need a count, by the way.
Yep.
Since it's an amendment, I have to. One, me too.
One.
All those opposed?
Zero.
All those who abstain after that resolution?
Zero.
21-0-0, the amendment passes. We are back into discussion on the resolution as it stands, and there are two other amendments. Pam, if you could scroll up, please, that Christy made. So these two amendments are now on the floor. So line 12, whereas the last known inter-campus travel survey was conducted in 2005 and on line 22 and 23, whereas during the November 17th meeting, the campus planning committee restated their vision for and support of integrated transportation planning for the campus and. All right, these amendments are, well, these are the two proposed amendments that are being made. Is there a second to the amendments so we can move into discussion on the amendments?
Second.
There's a second. Seeing how Being how the amendments are seconded, we're moving into discussion on the amendments only. Any comments on the amendments?
A call to question?
There's a call to question on the amendments. Is there a second?
Second.
And seconded, is there any dissent to voting on the amendments? Seeing none, we are going to vote. We are going to vote on those two items. All those in favor of inserting these two amendments into the resolution, please raise your placard.
Didn't they go backwards? Like those opposed?
Mm-hmm. 21.
All those opposed?
0.
All those who abstain?
0.
By a vote of 21-0, the amendments are inserted into the resolution. We're back into full discussion on discussion on the full resolution as amended. Comments, discussions, further amendments or other motions at this time?
Moved question.
Looks like seeing as though there's been a call to question. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been seconded. Any dissent to voting on the resolution? Seeing none, we are going to vote on Resolution 7 as a whole. So Resolution 7, all those in favor of Resolution 7, please raise your placard.
Twenty-one.
All those opposed, please raise your placards.
0.
All those who abstain, please raise your placards.
0.
By a vote of 21-0, Resolution 7 passes. Congratulations, Christy, and the Trenton chapter for all that work you all have been doing. So good job. All right, we are going back into the next item on under business of the day, which is Resolution 8. I'm sorry, I don't have my agenda up. It's Resolution 8, yes? Did I make that up?
Resolution 8, yes.
Resolution 8, so I gotta scroll down. Resolution 8, oh, this is me. Furthering institutional LGBT inclusion, LGBTQ inclusion. Okay, I'll make this brief. Lord, yes. So essentially, this resolution is something that was a collaborative effort done by the Colleague Network Group that essentially aims to put in place continued protections and assert some additional resources that are specifically at the LGBTQ community, but of course would benefit most populations overall. So really what we're, I mean, if you pay attention to the news, the executive order that was put in place during the Obama administration that prohibited federal contractors, which Cornell is one, from discriminating based on gender identity, expression, and sexual orientation was rescinded by the current administration. So this puts people in a fairly fairly ominous position, particularly, though there are some great New York State protections. If somebody doesn't mind closing the door, I'm assuming that noise is coming from outside, but it might not be. Because it's a little loud. Thank you. As we're asking for some pretty specific things, if you look in the resolved clauses, there was a directive given to the LGBT Resource Center to no longer serve the needs of faculty and staff. They are currently short-staffed. So if you go back to, I think, some of the language that was in R6, this is pretty similar, but this is something, when we sat down and had a meeting with the CNG, these are all the things that came out. And of course, the Employee Welfare Committee contributed and gave some additional amendments. But we really want that directive to be rescinded, because currently there is nowhere else for LGBTQ employees to go to get that support, particularly, and for us to do training around how to create a safe space for LGBTQ inclusion, since that directive is in place. Additionally, we're looking for additional staff in the center to help serve the needs of the entire campus. We need some guides for both supervisors and employees to know how they can transition in the workplace and what resources are available to them to do that, to make sure that any employees who are traveling abroad internationally are able to to be trained in terms of knowing what their resources are if they're going somewhere where they where it is legally a crime to identify as an LGBTQ individual. So just to make sure that they know what their protections are by the university. And we want to make sure that the Provost Capital Planning Group, as this assembly affirmed and the UA has affirmed previously, continues their work to create universal restrooms which benefit not only LGBTQ individuals and trans individuals, but also individuals with disabilities, those who have caretakers or who are caretakers, so that these single occupant facilities are accessible to people. And then finally, the final two are that we, of course, the CNG stays abreast of the issues that are going on and the progress on them, but also that Joel's office continues to utilize its resources to advocate for the rights of the employees for Cornell as an employer. So not just on behalf of students. So we send a delegation every year to really focus on things that are in the university's interest, particularly around financial aid. You know, students go and do that advocacy work. There isn't much done in terms of, you know, advocating for the rights of employees on campus. So we want to make sure that that's being done. But this is focused specifically on LGBT folks. So yeah, that's the basic overview of this. And I appreciate the amendments that the Employee Welfare Committee made. So I'll open it up for questions at this time. Questions, comments, amendments, motions, etc.
Carrie?
I was just wondering if it would be possible, when I was reading through this, the one thing that jumped out at me, I sort of, you know, just going in order, and we say the LGBT Resource Center founded in 1994 is the only center for students, faculty, and staff across the LGBT, you know, I'm not even going to try it. I'm going to mess up that acronym every time. So we go from there, and then it says, be it therefore resolved, we urge the those offices to rescind the directive. And it sort of comes out of nowhere. I was just wondering whether there could be a whereas clause as a data point to say on whatever date this office delivered a directive to do that. I mean, just to establish what we're talking about. That's my only comment at the moment.
We can. I don't know I'm sorry, I just hiccuped my coffee. I don't know the firm date for when that directive was sent. It was only
coming. Or, you know, in whatever month of 2017 or.
I can say in 2017.
Yeah, sure.
All right, give me 2 seconds to write that. Do you have some language? Whereas in 2017, a directive
was issued by the division of that whole
by the Dean of Students
or the LGBTRC to no longer serve staff and faculty.
No longer serve staff and faculty. And I'll add to that due to being understaffed.
Mm-hmm. I think that helps with the progression of it.
I think you're right. All right, so the motion on the floor, the amendment being proposed is to insert on line 34, we'll say. Insert on line 34, whereas in 2017, a directive was issued by the Dean of Students office, but we can say by the Dean of Students for the LGBTRC to no longer serve staff and faculty due to being understaffed. Is there a second to that amendment? And then if it is,
okay. We'll
have a discussion. So there's a second to the amendment. We're in discussion on the amendment only. Questions, comments, motions at this time. I think it helps the progression of the resolution. I think you're right. It also brings some clarity to it, so it doesn't come out of left field.
Seeing no questions, I'm going to call the question.
There's been a call to question on the amendment. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any dissent to voting on the amendment? Seeing none. All those in. Is there any dissent to accepting the amendment by unanimous consent? Seeing no dissent, the amendment is accepted by unanimous consent. All right, moving back into the resolution as a whole, questions, comments, amendments, et cetera.
I have two questions.
Please. I don't know who said it, but go ahead.
Daniela.
Oh, gotcha. It's like, I can't see it. So go ahead.
So first I was wondering what our peer institutions are doing, if they also have resource centers like this for employees, or I guess staff and faculty. And the second question is, in terms of hiring three additional full-time staff members, do those people have to be employed physically on Cornell's campus, or can they work remotely? Is that something that's considered or discussed?
So did Matt Carcella come in?
No.
Okay. Matt's actually co-sponsoring this with me. Matt was one of the, was the first, I believe the first, I might be making that up, director of the LGBT Resource Center. At one point it was fully staffed. And so in the discussion that we were having with the CMG, when we were talking about what a fully staffed resource center looked like, we did compare Cornell's model to others, and particularly the one at Michigan where the president came from actually. And most models actually do include, they have a few more staff than what we're asking for. What this is asking for would be technically a total of four full-time staff. Most centers are a bit more robust than that, but at base, we're looking at a director to oversee everything. You have two associate directors or an associate and assistant director who would focus on, or program coordinator, focus on the advocacy side, the programming side for both students, staff, and faculty, or for students, staff, and faculty, any policy changes and things like that, the ongoing support and advising of organizations, and then a program coordinator to really oversee the actual day-to-day office and logistical needs. We are not making a distinction of whether or not they need to be seated on campus or just employed by the university. In this age of remote work, I'm up for either as long as we have people who are accessible to the campus. I think we can go into some of the logistics on that. Did that answer your question?
Thank you.
Any other questions? Not seeing any other questions.
So,
go ahead, Cole.
Go ahead.
Kevin's going to call the question.
Call the question.
Okay, Kevin has called the question.
There's been a call. There's been a call to question on resolution 8. Is there a second? There's been a second. Is there any dissent to voting on resolution 8?
I just wanted to add one more thing. I'm sorry, if there's time.
Push pause. Yes. Suspend your amendment for 2 seconds. Go ahead.
Sorry. I just muted myself. I'm just looking at the line 61. Be it further resolved, the Division of University Relations shall utilize federal, their offices to lobby Congress to advance workplace protections. I'm wondering if there should be anything, a piece in there that says in collaboration with or in consultation with the LGBTRC, because otherwise I don't know how they would know what to lobby for.
That's what we put the final resolve clause in.
Oh.
About working directly with the CNG. So the LGBTRC sits on the CNG as well. And so it's a collective thing. We don't want this to be done without them.
Okay. So you see those two clauses going hand in hand.
They have to.
Okay.
Have to.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
So no dissent?
No, sorry.
Okay, so no dissent to voting.
It's my division, so I just need to make sure.
Gotcha. That being said, there's been a call to question. It's been seconded. There's no dissent, so we're going to vote on Resolution 8. All those in favor of Resolution 8, please raise your placards now. Oh, me too. Sorry, that was awkward. All those opposed to Resolution 8, please raise your placard now. I cannot
see. Zero.
All those who abstain.
Zero.
By a vote of 21-0, the resolution passes. We have expired time on our agenda. Is there a motion to adjourn the meeting?
Motion to adjourn.
And a motion to adjourn the meeting. Take care, folks. And I hope you enjoyed the holiday. Thank you. You've been very productive today.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, Carrie. Enjoy the day, folks.
Sounds good. Good job, Daniel.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
You're a good person. I appreciate it.
Okay. All right.
If we have enough people, we can actually break out into sort of small subgroups.
I feel like it was right. One, and that way I can tell her it's all taken care of, don't worry about it, and then she can do all the other stuff. But with as many different things that happen, it's like I found out in my efforts to help take care of some things, it then creates confusion to her. So anyway, but it's nice to, I'm hoping that next semester she doesn't have a class during this time because then she could actually come and be here in clerk during the time.
How was the meeting?
It's very informative. Like the transportation,
yeah.
I'm going to bring back to advocacy team. Yeah,
that is a huge staff issue.
Yeah.
One more.
Do you see Manisha very often? She hasn't responded to about getting her reimbursement. And
I'll just text her.
Yeah, and just say, you know, because I sent her the same message. Yours, I put in the same day as I got it, so hopefully you should get it pretty quickly.
Yeah. I want to sign my credit card again.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
It's like, no, yeah, able to.
I know. So I was like, oh, we got to get this message. So, I mean, I don't want to hound her about it, but at the same time, I feel like a little bit of the sense of responsibility
it's just a little preoccupied because of her upcoming AM exam in January.
Oh.
She isn't even coming to like a lot of the meetings that we're having, so I'm